Hey, everybody, make sure you come see me do live stand-up comedy in person. You can shake my hand. You can touch me. You can pet my head. Stand Up Live, Phoenix, Arizona, September 19th, September 20th. Come on out, Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale. Hell, drive all the way up from Tucson. Make sure you listen to all the other podcasts on the Fake Mustache label. Fake Mustache Studios loves talking shit with Eddie Ift, About Last Night with Brad Williams and Adam Ray, Let Me Tell You Something with Caroline Manzo, The Perfect 10 Podcast with Ralphie May and the great Lana Turner, and of course, Industry Standard with Barry Katz. Go to iTunes, hit subscribe to all of those. Come on now, enjoy the podcast.
Pretend you have a wad of cash in your hand. Now imagine throwing all of that cash in the garbage. That's what you're doing if you're leasing an expensive postage meter for your small business. What are you doing, man or woman? There's a better way. Stamps.com. You want to open a business? You want to run a small business? Stamps.com is the way to go. You get all the benefits of a postage meter and more, and it's just a fraction of the cost. Use your own computer and you print official U.S. postage. You could be your own Fed, man. Any envelope, any package, any time, any class of mail, it doesn't matter, and you never have to go to the post office again. Stamps.com. Stamps.com, right from your desk. Do everything you do at the post office with Stamps.com. I use Stamps.com to send out t-shirts from jmoore.com from my website. I use Stamps.com to send out all my personal letters and information. You should too. Right now, enter my last name, Moore, M-O-H-R, for this special offer. $110 bonus offer. That includes a digital scale and up to $55 in free postage. My word! That's a lot of letters, y'all. Don't wait. Go to stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage. Type in my last name. That's how they know you came there from here. Moore, M-O-H-R. Stamps.com. Enter Moore.
Put your name on it. Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Well, I'd like to hear about it, potheads.
How the fuck you gonna know how to be great if you don't study greatness? Look at the game change.
Donuts.
If you wanna battle with either that you will or you won't.
You know, you're not a bad looking man, Mr. Gals.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair.
There's something wrong with us. Something very, very wrong with us.
Are we rolling? Take five. Wayne Kramer, what's the most amount of takes MC5 ever banged out? I guess I'll just dive head first. You gotta get real close to the mic.
The most amount of takes. I think it was a week of trying to record Tutti Frutti.
I only heard the live version of Tutti Frutti. And I never realized how arduous a song it was until you hear a couple guys from Detroit banging it out. You did it well, and you did the MC5 version of it, but we've been playing Womp Bam Balam Womp Bam Boom, and it's meant for drums, not meant for voice. Apparently, Little Richard is a goddamn genius.
Oh, yeah. There's no question. He's a genius.
A week. Why a week to the Tutti Frutti?
Well, because the truth is the MC5 was woefully unprepared for the recording process, the studio recording process. You know, we did our first album live, and that's because we focused on playing live, and all the work we did was about how to put on a spectacular show. And our experience in the studio was limited to maybe three recording sessions where you went in and in 3 hours you cut two songs, did the overdubs, mixed it, and got out.
Yeah.
It was old school Detroit recording. So to get into a proper studio with a producer, John Landau, and to actually sit down and say, all right, now we're going to cut these tunes and we're going to cut them well and we're going to do it right. We realized that, the drummer couldn't play in time and the bass player couldn't make the chord changes.
That's a big problem.
So we discovered.
That's probably two out of three of the worst problems you could have in a band.
A rude awakening.
Yeah. Lead singer not being able to sing never held any band back.
No. And lead guitar players get away with murder.
Yeah.
All day. Yeah.
Just chop it up.
Yeah, like I meant to do that. We just play all over the place. It doesn't matter. But the bass player and the drummer, they got to be on their job.
Yeah. Now, did they ever fight? Because I'm obsessed with bass players and drummers. I'm obsessed with rhythm sections that don't get along and argue over time. Did they actually blame one another? Did they both know? Or were they clueless that they were actually not in time and not making chord changes?
They were clueless. We took a lot of acid in those days.
Yeah, and you're an angry kid.
We smoked a lot of weed.
Sure, but as an angry kid loaded, are you aware of how fucked up it's going? Or are you just tripping balls going, sounds good to me. I like what you did on that drum.
Yeah, we did a lot of sounds good to me. A lot of, that's it, man. A lot of right on, bro. And yes, this is heroic music.
As long as we get the anger,
it's
man.
Adventurous music. And fight it's revolutionary government. Music.
You know, it is revolutionary music. And what's amazing to me is when I, please kill me. I think it's the Richard Heller book. Please kill me that you guys.
Legs McNeil,
excuse me. Richard Heller, of course, being the lead singer of a band. Legs McNeil, Please Kill Me. You guys are mentioned so much. And I read it about 10 years ago, 8 years ago in Manhattan. And then I just dove head first into the bands I wasn't as familiar with. MC5 at the top of the list. And the reverence with which everyone speaks about MC5. So I go back, I listen to MC5, and for the last 8 years, I always just simply marvel. Revolutionary, yes, in spirit, but the songs to me, and I mean this just completely pragmatic, they're pretty right down the middle. It's rock and roll. And it's written about like, oh, these guys were fucking crazy, bro. And then when I listen to it and I hear you guys playing along with like Motorhead and I hear the live womp womp bloom womp bam boom, I go, this is a great band, but it's almost like you're not getting favors by people saying how out there and how you really broke ground, and you did break ground, but I'm sure you trade being the tip of the spear for a couple platinum records and a few more record deals.
You know, I don't know. Because
bullshit.
If I had gotten
your
rich,
wife's in the corner going, don't listen to him. Not
if I had gotten rich,
yeah,
I would probably have killed myself by now.
Really?
Oh yeah, I was insane. You I'm did still insane, but
you tried without being rich. So yeah, I guess that's.
I just didn't have enough money.
No,
I ran out of drugs.
What is it? You know, the discussion friends of mine and me have a lot. My wife and I have this discussion all the time. Like most underrated people in music, when it comes to MC5, it's kind of game over. And it's almost, I remember Alex Chilton, I was hearing an interview once a long time ago at some place. And he was like, yeah, you know what? I'd like to not get a little critical acclaim once in a while. It'd be nice if someone just scratched me a check for putting out a pile of shit.
Yeah, I'm looking for, you know, I've been trying to sell out for years. Nobody's been buying. I'm waiting for the point when people say, Yeah, I liked his early stuff. That's when he was really rocking. His new stuff sucks. Because when they say your new stuff sucks, it means it's you're selling a lot of them.
Yeah, oh, that's right. You know, I have a sports radio show now on I've parlayed 40 movies into AM radio. So I'm really going about this ass fucking backwards. but very happy and just sucking from a corporate teat. Who knew that milk was so warm and how well it flowed? If we only knew it earlier, Wayne Kramer.
Well, but, you know, that doesn't – it's this is all speculation. If we knew it,
oh,
what
sure.
about –
Of course
you know,
it is.
It's fun kind of to amuse myself and think about what might have been. But, you know, I have to be in the here and now, and I got to think about how things really are and you know, what the hell am I going to do next?
Well – When I put MC5 in my Pandora on my phone when I'm working out or if I'm running or whatever I'm doing, goofing off, driving to work, I thought to myself, this is the only channel on that whole Pandora thing that they do where every band that's not MC5, I always in my mind smile and I go, Wayne would like this. Because it's always like the Stooges.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Fuzz Tones out of England? Like really... great bands, and there's never like a piece of garbage where like anything else that you type in, there's always like, Little Wayne, how'd this get in here? I typed in Bad Brands, I'm listening to Little Wayne on the beach. So it is interesting to me, Wayne Kramer of MC5 on More Stories, and this is exciting for me because I'm a music geek. But it's also when I see the people you roll with, that old expression, tell me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are. The people that I just fell in front of, Perry Farrell and, you know, Jerry Cantrell and Gilby and those guys and Morello, I'm like, those guys are at your altar. And that's high praise, because those are the guys, you know, wrestling rooms in high school and getting laid for the first time and Jane's Addiction in 88. Like, this is what happens. This is music. So, you have great people that think you're pretty fantastic. I'm not at that level, but I will say, sir, well done. How do you go about, I'm going to go on a lot of other tangents.
Let's go.
But I'm a little obsessed.
I'm good to go with you.
Okay, good. Let's ride together, brother. I'm very fascinated by people. Oh, the discussion that my wife and I have all the time about most underrated people. Like, you go, you know, Elvis Costello. I don't think people really realize how good, you know, he wrote an opera. Prince comes up. Like, people know he's great, but it's fucking, it's other level. But like MC5, it's just game over. And I will put MC5 in the middle of the table in the underrated and never really got to cash in and got what they deserved. Like, people, I've had people, Steve Lillywhite sat right where you're sitting and said Cream. I'm like, fuck, I'm still listening to fucking Cream. I knew Cream in high school. What is the barrier between a great band, not good, great band, seminal band like MC5, and the guy at Starbucks? If you and I went to Starbucks right now and I said, this is Wayne Kramer from MC5, he'd go, I think so, kick out the jams or something. Like, what is the buffer between what you were doing and the reception on a much larger scale?
You mean, how is it that it's sustained?
No, how is it possible that you're not a household name?
Oh, well, it's easy to understand that. You know, we are in a commodity culture, a product culture that measures. I mean, it's not really egalitarian. It measures. People are measured. Their value is measured in dollars and cents, in units sold, in gold records, or platinum records, or Oscar nominations, So the MC5, you know, was kicked out of the music business and has remained kicked out of the music business by the people that controlled what used to be the record industry, the music business, you know, Jan Wenner, the Erdogans, you know, all the people that decided that they wanted no part of us, that they wanted us off the radar, and have maintained that position all these decades. So it's no surprise to me that, the MC5 isn't in the pantheon of rock bands from our era or from any era.
And but rock musicians, you're the top.
The musicians have always given us mad props because musicians know musicians. Musicians are paying attention to what other musicians are doing. We're all incredibly competitive in a brotherly kind of way.
Yeah.
And you know, musicians connect the dots. You know, everybody, if you play an instrument, you want to know who the guys were that influenced you, who influenced them. And so you start connecting it back. And if you're in the rock world, eventually you end up with the MC5.
On Twitter, at Wayne Kramer, exactly how you think it's spelled, at Wayne Kramer. Hit him up. Let him know you heard him here and you're digging it. I will say this, the fans that listen to this podcast, 250,000 per every Monday, every Friday, but people come on late, like people tweet me like, hey, I'm listening to the episode, and it's like from very long ago, and I'm like, you got some catching up to do. They know I don't steer them wrong, so they know we've had guests on where I go, well, if you want to watch this show, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say to anybody listening, just in front of you, which is glorious moment for me. If anybody out there listening right now, just if you have not just sat down and bathed in MC5, I put my name on it. I'll pay for your records. I'll pay for whatever you're using to listen to MC5. My friends, get out there and get yourself edumacated. There's nothing better. It's the best.
I'll tell you the best record to listen to.
Please.
We made three albums, three proper releases. The first one was a live recording, which is a pretty good souvenir of an MC5 gig. The second one was, it was a little bit of an overreaction to the criticism that we got. You know, when you're young and you're Pollyannish, and you work really hard on your thing, whatever your career is, your craft, your art, and you put it out there and you get kicked in the teeth for it, you take it personally. At least I took it personally.
Sure.
So I wanted to prove to the world, these people that were so critical of us, the rock press, rock intelligentsia, that we were who we said we were, and that we were amongst the great rock bands of our time. And so I wanted, you know, we had a lot of criticism about the tempos and tuning the guitars and, you know, pitch. And so I wanted to make a record that answered my critics. I went a little too far with it because I'm an extremist and I'm an all or nothing person. I go too far with most everything. And I did with that record. So the best record is the third album. It's called High Time. It's on Atlantic and it's available. You can find it. And it was at that point, the MC5 had learned how to work in a recording studio. We had learned how to be creative in the studio environment. We wrote some great songs, great performances. It's a great sounding record. Sonically, it's great. And by that time, of course, Atlantic Records was just letting us make the record to fulfill our contract so they could dump us.
Yeah.
So it got no promotion. I think the entire publicity campaign, the marketing campaign, consisted of one quarter page ad in Rolling Stone with a new band they had just signed called the Allman Brothers.
Those guys.
So that was it. You know, they were done with us.
It was a you had to share the quarter page.
We had to share
from Atlantic Records.
They went with the Allmans, you know. All they wanted to do is boogie. The MC5 wanted to change the world, you know.
It's a Herculean task changing the world. and guys like you don't give it up easily. I know now you still are out there doing it. And we were speaking earlier about jailguitardoors.org. The fact that we'll get to prison, obviously, in a second, but the fact that you've now dedicated your life to, well, why don't you explain to people what the charity is?
Well,
I talk too much, Wayne.
Not at all.
Oh,
at all.
You should read the tweets.
Quite articulate.
Let me just finish.
What we do is simple. We find people that work in corrections that are willing to use music as a tool for rehabilitation, and we provide them with guitars, sometimes some other instruments. We also sometimes put on in-prison concert events.
Yeah.
And we also work on a political level for legislative change and justice reform. I spend a fair amount of time in Washington holding Congress people's feet to the fire to try to get them to address the national disgrace of mass incarceration.
Now we're talking.
Living through.
Go ahead, brother. Keep going. Because now we're talking. Now we're breaking ground here. I've read your articles on Huffington Post. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You're at a table with people that no longer do the things they used to do, and no good would have come from anybody here sitting in a jail cell.
No.
You're with friends, and you write scathing, blistering, yet completely historically and statistically accurate articles about the absolute failure of the war on drugs. And when you were incarcerated, what really took me was, please let the listener know how many more people are in jail from when you were in jail.
Well, when I was in prison, the entire prison population of the nation was about 300,000 people, 50,000 people in the federal system. Today, there are 2.3 million of our fellow citizens, our friends, our relatives, serving incredibly severe sentences in America, the world's greatest democracy. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. We lock up more people for longer periods than Iran, China, Yemen.
Per capita.
And per capita.
Yeah.
Any other country in the history of the world.
And what percentage of that is drug-related offenses?
Half.
Are you really?
Half of the people serving these sentences are nonviolent drug offenders.
And what better way to make someone violent than throw them in a fucking cell with a crazy violent person?
Well, this is the point. This is what we're trying to address.
Well, by the way, may I just point out a flaw in your charity? You're giving guitars to prisoners. What better way to brain your cellmate than with a new Les Paul? Take the strings off and strangle them. Maybe a ukulele, something a little smaller. Maybe a harmonica could help people.
You know, they already know how to brain their roommates and their cellmates.
Long before.
Yeah, they
get Brian Jones' teardrop guitar.
They can do that fine. they don't need guitars to do that. You raise a good point that the, you know, the get tough on crime era of the 80s, it was politically expedient to get tough on crime. And so they...
And that's cyclical, too, it seems.
In a way. It never existed before Barry Goldwater.
Agreed.
Before Barry Goldwater, crime was never a political issue.
It seems to ebb and flow. And then when things get a little lackadaisical, you go, oh, we know how to get our guy over the top. He's not taking shit off of anybody. He'll fucking put your nose in the dirt, put a boot on the back of your neck, and put you in jail for selling LSD grilled cheeses at a fish concert. Okay. I have to do Amazon ads, and it seems absurd to talk about incarceration and flip-flop over to Amazon. However, they're a great sponsor.
I like Amazon. I'm down with Amazon.
Well, good. Well, you go to jmoore.com, you click the Amazon banner, Wayne Kramer, and you can buy High Time. You can buy your own album.
Talking about.
How about this? Anybody listening right now to the More Stories podcast, go to Amazon, go to jmoore.com, click the Amazon banner, and buy yourself an MC5 CD, DVD, record. However you want to work your the MC5 world, work it. Just fucking do it. I've never steered these people wrong. I give them a book. You're very kind. I give him a book. I give him this. I give him that. I've never had... Matty Boy is my witness. I've never seen a single tweet from somebody going, that was horseshit. Like, you made me read The Devil and Sonny Liston. That was shit.
It's true.
Or you made me listen to... I don't know what the fuck. You know, Black Crowes.
Devil and Sonny Liston was a great book.
So we're going to get along great. We're going to be friends a long time. I like this. Amazon, buy yourself...
Hands, feet...
Yeah, that's it. That's all you need. A heavy bag and a vodka orange juice for Sonny. This person is not buying the MC5 records instead, but he went a little bigger. Hey, JJ, I got a new tire for my Suzuki DRZ400 by clicking through your Amazon link at jmoore.com. Now I'm ready for a few thousand more miles of gravel roads. You've been dominating even more than normal with some of the guests you've scored lately. With the new tire and more stories loaded on my iPod, I'm ready to ride. Put your name on it, buddy. Jamie in Arlington, Washington. Jamie, thank you, brother. That's cool as hell. Do you ride motorcycles, Wayne?
Not anymore.
You used to?
When I was a young man.
I was going to say, it seems like a very 70, like, cokey thing to do. You grow your hair into, like, a Jufro and be like, come on, let's all go for a ride on my motorcycle. Helmets are for fags.
Before that, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Coming out of high school and... I was a high school motorcycler and
in Detroit?
Yeah.
So you got to do it about 2 months out of the year?
When you're young, gravel. You ride in the winter.
That's true.
If you're hard.
Ice, gravel. There you go, buddy. Ice, gravel, or spent shells littering the roads in the suburbs of Birmingham and Bloomfield Hills. One more and we'll continue. Ron Schade, S-C-H-A-D-E, Schade, Shade? Shade. I'm going to go Shade. Ron Shade, JJ, thanks for the free funny on the podcast. Had to throw some cash away through Amazon. Bought $424 worth of board and card games for the family. Playing with my kids and my wife, doing the dad thing. I know it's not a room full of flat screen TVs, but at least my stuff works when the power goes out. Keep the podcast. Well, a little shot at Sarah Brady. I don't know if that's cool. Keep the podcasts coming. Fellow New Jersey guy, Ron. I can't think of a word. Ron, all respect to you, brother. But I don't know of a worse idea for me and my family than to bust out Parcheesi with a 10-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a wife. Maybe go walk around outside. But I can't clown the guy because he helped me out. I'm just saying, from my personal experience.
Board games aren't a hit around
here?
It
always winds up in an argument like, well, who said there was free parking in Monopoly? Like, well, it's house rules. Yeah, but we all live here, asshole. So you got to explain the house rules. And then when you're playing like, you know, Pictionary, you start. That's like the all-time fighting with the spouse, fighting with your brothers and sisters.
Interesting.
Like, you just draw a line and like, roller coaster, hot dog. You're like, it's a fucking line. Let me get a second stroke. This ain't calligraphy, dude. I'm going to take the pen off the page.
Sounds like a rough bunch.
No, it's just not. That's the thing that's amazing about it. You were incarcerated for selling cocaine to police.
Federal agents.
Now, all right, how do you go from selling it to like the cop to federal agent? Is that music related? Like, you guys are making such a ruckus, they're like, we want this guy out of here.
Well, it's interesting. I asked the DEA agent in charge, as he was at one point after I was out on bond and everything, I said, you know, how'd you get to me, you know? And he said, Kramer, you were easy. We have shit on you going back to the 60s, you know?
That's spooky.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like Snowden stuff.
Well, but it's no mystery. The some of us in the White Panther Party were indicted with a conspiracy to destroy government property. Somebody blew up the CIA office in Ann Arbor. I didn't set the bomb. And a few of us were indicted.
Is there a statute of limitations on that?
No, indictments came down pretty quick.
No, I mean after the fact.
Is there the statute of limitation runs
will
from...
Would you get in trouble if I ask you more questions about it?
There's nothing I could tell you that would get me in trouble.
Oh.
But it's a statute of limitations runs from the offense to the arrest.
Oh.
So, you know, that. So if it's 7 years before you're arrested.
But you weren't arrested for the bomb. You were arrested for the cocaine.
Yeah. But I'm telling you why they already knew about
me. Gotcha.
The feds had started a program called COINTELPRO, where they infiltrated all the anti-war groups, all the anti-establishment youth groups, the Black Panther Party, the Yippies, the White Panthers.
I heard they got some Puerto Ricans in that net too.
The Brown Panthers.
Yeah.
And
scooped up a couple Puerto Ricans.
And they slid agents in on everybody and tried to undermine their effectiveness. So what happened was we were indicted, and when it got to court, the judge in Detroit, the federal judge Damian Keith, said that the government had to show us the wiretap logs. So, you know, in the discovery process, they have to show you what they're going to use against you in court. And they said, no, we're not going to show it to you. And the judge said, well, then I'm throwing the case out. He threw the case out. The Justice Department, the Mitchell Justice Department appealed it. So it was the United States of America versus Damian Keith, the federal judge in Detroit. And we went to the Supreme Court with it, because what happened was the government, didn't have warrants to tap our phones, to bug us. It was all done illegally on a presidential decree on the basis of national security. And we're a nation of laws. We're not a nation of presidential decrees. And the Constitution says you can't tap my phone without a warrant. We're in familiar territory nowadays.
Yeah, because now you can't. It's the Patriot Act just threw it. Now, who was president? It was Nixon.
It was Nixon.
Yeah.
And in fact, when we went to the Supreme Court.
He was the best dictator we ever had.
We went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court agreed with us, and we beat the case.
Now, that must have made the feds mad.
Well, yeah, it's embarrassing for them.
It seems, this is my fascination with guys in that time, both on both sides, the G-men and and you guys and the Black Panther Party, and like, we got to get them down, and the Muslims, and what Malcolm X was just basically preaching black economics, like, put your money into a black business. That way the money doesn't leave the town when the store closes. Like, it was, if everybody listened to Malcolm X, he would have saved a few places from becoming ghettos. What were you guys doing that made the federal government go, we got to get in there? Like, now we have terror cells. We have people actually figuring out ways to blow up casinos as we speak. Probably within 60 miles of where we're sitting, there's six guys in a room going, okay, I'll walk into blank. You're going to create the distraction. Like, we need that attention because they're trying to kill and harm Americans. Your whole message, to the best of my understanding, and even through the music of the MC5, was, you know, this government can't tell us what to do. Like, you were basically the first libertarians.
Well, they can't do it and break their own rules.
Sure. Is it safe to say, you, in a very broad stroke, it's kind of like the first libertarians, just don't tell me how to run my shit. You take care of your shit. I'll play within the paradigm you've set up to the best of my ability. I like to toot here, ride a motorcycle there without a helmet. We'll do our thing. But what is it that you're doing that makes the federal government think you're that fucking dangerous?
We're getting through to young people. We're spreading a message of self-determination and an anti-imperialist, anti-racist message. And they depend on these things to sustain themselves in power. And we represented the tip of the iceberg, because in my generation, when I was 17, 18, 19 years old, all young people were in agreement that the country was going in the wrong direction. Conscription and the Vietnam War was unanimously hated. I mean, nobody saw the sense of this war in this little country that no one had hardly even ever heard of.
Right.
You know, I mean, our attitude in Detroit was, when the Viet Cong are coming through the Windsor Tunnel, we're there.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, I mean, like Muhammad Ali said, you know, the Viet Cong never called me names. The Viet Cong never did anything to me. What I saw was Shell Oil and some kind of leftover Cold War communist propaganda, fear of communism, which I rather embraced. I kind of liked the idea of communism. And I saw a bunch of old men in Washington that were sending young men off to die. And it was more than I could stomach. And I was just part of a larger generation that felt the same way.
And you're still very much involved, and which makes me, I just don't have, I'm very guilty of apathy. I will, and I'm admittedly so. And there's things that go on in this country that I think are above my pay grade and above my intelligence, and I don't think I can make a difference. I think I want you to do most of the talking here, but I just to get the tablet established before we dive again head first. Think globally, act locally has just always been one of my favorite expressions. Like, I can think globally, but in Santa Monica, whether it's St. Monica's Church or, you know, sticking up for the homeless here, the mental health is a huge, huge, the Thalian Center at Cedars. Like, that's my little world where I can contribute. But the fact that you guys protested about wars and stuff, I don't know why I don't. So I'll put myself as a part of the problem. And I don't know if it's a part of the problem, but it's certainly a part of the malaise. The fact that we went to war in Iraq and under false pretenses, and I think it's safe to say that I don't know how many people could argue that we didn't. Like, because you do run the risk, like 8 years ago, you'll just get obliterated by just saying what I just said, like, well, hold on a second. But it was bad. Where is the outrage? Where has all, is it all into the iPads and the Minecraft and the Pokemon? Is it all into the video games and the Snookies and the JWows on the TV and the Kardashians? Where is the outrage in the 17 and 8-year-olds today? Wayne Kramer, you're an expert at being angry and doing the right thing. You did the wrong thing about it a couple of times. You did the right thing about it most of your life. Where is it?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the solution, I see, you know, a kind of neo-anarchism, anarcho-syndicatism as a small thing.
Say that
community
again.
Gardens.
Son of a bitch. Say that again.
You know.
Say that again.
Anarcho-syndicatism.
Is really?
Or neo-anarchism. You know, anarchism gets a bad rap because everybody thinks it's about trashing the place.
But I just know it's a cool logo to put on my high school notebook, bro.
It's an old idea.
I can spell Jay Moore with an anarchy logo as the A. I'm in.
The trashing the place and starting over is an old idea. But there's something to a non-hierarchical culture that can kind of improvise as it goes along based on a morality that we an agreed on morality, almost a evolutionary morality. And I think that it shows up in places like community gardens and volunteer work at a hospital and maybe doing a little something with
showing up gently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that changes the world. The broad strokes, I don't think the changes happen from the top down. I think they happen from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Regular people like you and me, like us, doing what this little thing, maybe we do something over here, some volunteer work. Because I think what's happened is there's great disappointment in our big institutions, religion and politics. They failed us. They don't deliver the way we thought they would deliver, or maybe they used to deliver, but they don't anymore. And this disappointment can give rise to, meaninglessness. And that can take two forms. There's like a hard form, which is, you know, gangsterism, violence, crime, terrorism, violence.
Let me interject real quick. I don't think any Bloods or Crips are being jumped into the gang because they're pissed off at Shell Oil and IBM.
No, but there's nothing in the world that means anything to them.
Okay.
It's meaninglessness.
And once they're in the gang, there's meaning and purpose.
Oh, there's huge meaning in the gang. Okay. There's a family in the gang.
Oh, sure. We're in agreement. Okay.
So then there's a soft nihilism, which can take the form of, my friend Simon Critchley calls it American Buddhism, which is like, you know, I'm just going to take care of mine. I'm going to study Kabbalah. I'm going to meditate. I'm going to go up in the hills. I got my family. I'm all right. And I think both of them. So I think the antidote for that is meaningful action, taking some action in your neighborhood, in your family, with your friends, in your community, some small positive action. I think that that's
is that a concession?
Because no,
when you
no, absolutely not. Because
when you were doing it, you were taking on the government. They had files on you, Wayne Kramer. They had files on John Lennon.
And you see what it got me.
Sure, but it's a salient point, and it's highly relative.
And it was a different time too.
They had files on guys, and we're figuring out ways to either whack them or ship them away.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about community gardens.
Yep.
Is that a societal concession?
I think it's a step towards, there's efficacy in it. It'll work. It's viable.
It'll work locally.
Well, if it works locally, it works everywhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you just need to work locally in enough places.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think people are finding that by taking some positive action, even for me, in my case, you know, the work I do in the prisons, it's a temporary break from meaninglessness for me, because you know I suffer from it too. You know, I wonder what the hell's going on. This is a mess. You know, these hedge fund guys have stolen all the money in the country. There's no money left for anybody else.
Yeah.
How do we undo that? Market forces rule the culture. You know, how do I undo that? I don't know. But what I can do is help these guys serving these terrible sentences. What I can do is some, you know,
We should do a show at Irving Plaza and melt people's faces. That makes people happy, and you know.
I can amuse people by singing and dancing. It's an important thing.
What's your favorite dance?
My favorite dance?
Yes, sir.
Probably the Boogaloo.
The Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Not the Shorty George.
I'm old school.
I had you as a Shorty George guy, shaking the boobs down. when
the Freaky Deaky. That's my favorite dance.
I appreciate that. I like that. I'm either Freaky Deaky or I like to do the Pee Wee Herman. When people, and I don't want to get too far away, you know what? I'm not going to let stats get in the way of a great conversation. The MC5 is the band and they're fucking great. Moving on. When the Patriot Act gets passed, for example, and when there's a suspension of habeas corpus, that's a conversation I have with people. It's almost like, you know, Nixon has his silent majority. Like now the new silent majority of people like going, they don't have to read me my rights. This is kind of fucked up. Like that's really where, to me, I don't understand where the outrage is. And Guantanamo, I'm not going to get into politics. I wouldn't legitimize either party with my affiliation. The Zodiac is 12 departments, and that's all fucking screwy. So I don't think how you can divide a country into two departments with far more people in it. But the fact that there's just people in a prison that have never been read their rights, and they're never leaving. And you've just made five family members vow to create harm against the United States and the unborn for the rest of their lives because they don't know why they have a family member in Cuba. Furthermore, how the fuck do we have an army base on Cuba if we don't acknowledge Cuba? It's
mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling.
It's infuriating.
And I'm red, white, and blue, bro.
Yeah.
I'm the guy. I pay enough taxes to prove it. I guess... If it bothers me, it must keep you up at nights. Like, why isn't this generation in the streets raising hell? And I'm not saying knock over store windows and pull fucking bikes out of a big five.
Yeah.
But like, where are the people going? Hey man, we got to get habeas corpus back. That's kind of a big deal.
Well, it begs the question.
Matty Boy can't jerk off on his computer anymore because they could be looking at him.
It's true. It's true.
It's a big habit.
Go to the library. It's not even.
It's got to go to a library just to jerk off.
It begs the question.
You can just say it, love.
It begs the question: Are we really? Is there really such a thing called progress? I mean, I see the limit of that thinking,
individually, certainly,
but it's an interesting idea because. You know, clearly, like, you know, scientifically, there's progress. If a third of the world's misery is dental, then anesthetic dentistry is progress. People aren't in pain because
I say we let those people go. I don't want to worry about other people. Hold on, real quick. When people come up to me, like at a Hollywood party, like, hey, I'm doing a Dentist Without Borders, I kick them. Really? You want to fix fucking teeth in Guatemala? There's hungry people in Venice. No, but these people don't have dentistry. They shouldn't. They eat bad food and they don't floss. Sorry, go ahead, Wayne Kramer of MC5. Fucking Dentist Without Borders. And also, could you spay and neuter your cat? That's high up on my
list. If you want to really get depressed, the earth is infested with human beings.
Yeah.
There's too many people.
It's like mold.
Yeah.
It starts like rats, on the outer edges.
They're like lemmings.
Yeah.
In 1500, there were a billion people on the earth. Today, there's 9 billion people on the earth. I think we're just about to max out what the earth can produce. You know, 99% of the species that have existed on this planet, done.
Yeah.
The planet is going to be fine.
It's George Carlin. This
you
is
and me?
Great Carlin stuff.
We may not make it.
George Carlin said it's a self-generating system. It was like an 11-minute beautiful monologue he gave.
Yep,
and meteor showers and the reversing of the magnetic pole. The planet's fine. The people are fucked.
Yep.
You're going to tell us, what does he say? The planet's going to be shut down because of plastic bags? When the earth is done with us, he said, it'll shake us off like fleas.
And to suggest to the people of Earth that they should not have so many babies is a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people are having babies at a rate that's stunning.
Adam Carolla, a great podcaster, and he's the head of the snake. He's top of the totem pole in this world. Is his whole thing is like, if you're gonna have a lot of babies in Canada and the U.S. and France and England, it's kind of a different story because you get your shit together. It's third world. He could be perceived as very racist and harsh, but it's a very fair point. There has to be maybe some type of education in other countries. Like, you can't feed one. You got to kind of dial it back a little bit. But where's the outrage? Going back to point A.
This is going to require too much thinking for most people.
No, I don't think so. But, all right. Why aren't people outraged? They don't care? Is it just, I don't care that the government can spy on me and tap my phone without asking me? And
I just think it's just too much for them.
Yeah.
It's the reality of it's too much.
Why wasn't it
too easy to be distracted by podcasts and,
creep,
video games and rock music and hip hop and the Kardashians and 10,000 other things.
But why weren't you guys distracted?
Well, we didn't have all the distractions that we have today.
I think the sliding scale of distractions versus the level you took it to, I think it evens out. I think it shakes out at the end of the day. You guys, again, they had files on you, dude.
And, you know, we were also young and thought that we were absolutely right about everything. And
what were you wrong about?
Oh, then? Man.
Seriously.
Well, I think the biggest issue was violence, that we embraced violence as a viable strategy, political strategy. And it was just the most ass backward, knuckleheadedest idea. You know, sometimes you come up with an idea and you just think, oh, this is what we should do, and you do it. And we were all in agreement. You know, we admired the Black Panthers because they took guns and law books into the street and were ready to confront the police. And then when they said there needs to be a group in the white community that does the same work, we said, that's us. And we got guns and it was a terrible mistake, because once you turn that corner and embrace the image of the gun and the rhetoric of the gun and the actual gun itself, you cannot predict the outcome. And the legitimate political establishment has way more guns, and they will use all of them against you.
Yeah.
So the Black Panther Party got death squads in every city in America. There were these huge confrontations where the police basically went in and shot them all to pieces.
Yeah.
You know, for us, we were indicted. Some of us went to prison. And the MC5 was, of course, kicked out of the music business.
When you say kicked out,
they didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Kicked out, like you just couldn't get a record deal, or kicked out, blacklisted, or kicked out other musicians wouldn't talk to you, or all of the above?
Blacklisted, yeah, all the above.
So like Velvet Underground doesn't return your calls, but they were just as much a troublemaker as everybody else.
They weren't as much of a troublemaker as we were.
Well, no one was, really. But like G.G. Allin, New York Dolls, these are guys that were like, I mean, the Sex Pistols, your contemporaries, there's a lot of bands that are not blacklisted for music, and yeah, now they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, but you know, none of the difference is that that all stayed in the sphere of music. It was easy to contain it because it's on the entertainment page,
right,
in the newspaper. And the MC5, you know, the attitude in the MC5's era in our city, in Detroit, amongst parents, prosecutors, police officers, was, when is somebody going to do something about this band? Because we can't allow them to say the things they're saying, do the things they're doing, telling young girls to not wear brassieres, that it was okay for people just to have sex, that it was all right to smoke weed, that it was actually okay.
Yeah, when does that come back? Like, fucking bell bottoms came back. When does free sex and pot come back?
I think the pot's coming back.
The pot's,
I mean,
back.
It's a
pot's
rallying
back
cry.
Time.
Like, why weren't people on Wall Street just banging them out, smoking dupes, and having sex?
And the sex is actually still happening.
Yeah.
I believe it to be true.
You know, I took my kid to Kidnasium today and there were babies there. So it's fair enough. I want people to definitely check out jailguitardoors.org. It's not a down the middle charity. And I love your quote, it's the loudest charity.
It's not saving the seal puppies.
Yeah.
And, you know, I oftentimes make a point to say, you know, we believe in the rule of law. I believe in the rule of law. I believe in safe streets and I believe in people being held accountable for their behavior. But I think the punishment should fit the crime and what we do in America. This is not justice to lock people up for decades for nonviolent substance abuse offenses is not justice. In fact, even the violent crime sentences are too damn long. I mean, in Scandinavia, that nutcase went out and murdered 70 people or 80 people.
He was good at it.
And he's going to do 38 years. I mean, his life is over. He's going to do the bulk of his life is done. He's going to be in confinement. And in this country, we have a thing called life without the possibility of parole. Now, that means you will be there forever.
Yeah.
And that means you're not redeemable. There's nothing in you worth saving. And certainly that's true about some people, but that's not true about all of them.
Is
40,000 people in America serving life without the possibility of parole sentences.
Wayne Kramer, why can't you be redeemed within that prison? But still,
there is no redemption for LWOP prisoners. They don't get rehabilitation programs.
I mean, redeemed from the inside out.
Many do.
Yeah.
Many do.
You're not leaving jail ever, but you can find your higher
many
power.
Many do. I have a dear friend
others.
Serving an LWOP sentence who is a completely transformed individual.
And are you, if that guy was just out and they said, wow, you really made a difference in your life, and they released him, you put your name and your family on the line going, you
could move in with me.
But that's easy because you're the guy that believes in him. It's moving in with somebody else that's the problem.
Well, it's not a problem.
Really? That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the opposite would be to say people cannot change.
Yeah.
And I believe people can change.
Of course they can change. And of course people can be redeemed and everybody needs a second chance and can be forgiven. And I think I'm completely against the death penalty for a myriad of reasons, and I'm not a big fan of abortion, but I don't think men should vote on what goes on in women's bodies. We have old billionaires. I hate when people go billion with a B. Yeah, I fucking heard you with an H. Billion. That's the only word we do. I'm going to go cut the lawn with an L. Fucking dope. It just sounded like Jim Norton. Fucking dope. Yuck. I don't think rich billionaire white men should be voting on our wives and what they do with it. Personally,
I'm with you.
I'm against it, but I don't have a vagina or fallopian tubes or any of the parts entailed or any of the parts in between. I don't even have a labia. I would tell you if I did. But life without parole seems to be a far worse sentence than death.
Yes, death, absolutely. And there are no legal protections. When you negotiate a life without the possibility of parole sentence, there is no appeal. There's no going back to court. There's nothing.
And I don't think I don't think America knows this. Death, unlimited appeals.
Oh, yeah. There's great legal protections.
Anybody who thinks the death sentence works, I know I'm preaching to the converted, but I also have to talk to my constituents that are kind enough to go, I will listen to something for free twice a week. You know, I will fucking do that for that guy. You know what? That's mighty white of me. The fact I had Damien Echols on this podcast, and he was on death row for 18 years and 76 days. And the fact that people are on death row for 18 years, that ain't death row, brother. I've been alive for 18 years. It's that old Chris Rock joke. A stabbing chair don't cost nothing. Just take him out back, sit him in a folding chair. Let's, you know, we're good. But you know much more about prison statistics than I do, I would guess, and this is a crazy out of my ass guess, I would guess the average time on death right now, people on death row, I would say most people, they've been there about 8 years. Because there's guys that have been there 30 years.
My friend's been there 32 years.
That's not death. That's not a death sentence.
He was a 19-year-old punk rocker in Orange County. He was a bad guy. He was a big, tough guy. Liked beating people up. And he beat a guy up in a barroom fight. Didn't mean to kill him, but the guy died.
And that
terrible
thing. That should be manslaughter, and that should be...
Terrible thing. Terrible, tragic, the most horrible thing one human can do to another.
And he gets sent up for premeditated murder one.
Didn't know his rights.
Okay.
Because to humiliate the guy he beat up even worse, he took his wallet, ripped it in two, and threw it on the roof after the fight. Because he took the wallet, the court said it was in the course of a robbery, and they wanted to give him the death penalty, but they would negotiate down to LWOP. And he's 19 years old. What does he know? He says, yeah, okay, fine. And now it's 32 years later, and he has completely transformed himself. He's 25 years clean and sober. He's educated himself. He's an award-winning author. He has organized...
Can we say his name on the podcast?
Of course. His name's Ken Hartman. He's organized a yard at the maximum security prison at Lancaster called the Honor Yard. And if you agree to the Honor Yard rules, which are no violence, no racism, no gang affiliations, no drugs and alcohol, and you agree to program, you can live on this yard with no drama. And most of the men on that yard, that's their home. They're not scheduled to be going anywhere. And it's a brilliant concept.
Living on the yard, like spending a lot of time in it or actually bunking in it?
No, you live there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, you live there, your recreation there, you eat there.
This is a great conversation for me because, you watch Locked Up Abroad and you watch, all the MSNBC shows and you go, oh, these people, that guy and this gang, that gang, that gang. And to hear firsthand that Ken Hartman's on the inside in Lancaster doing something incredibly positive and laying down the law.
And the guys themselves are they maintain it. If somebody starts to get out of line, they pull them aside and say, look, bro, that ain't how it works. This is how it works. Let us help you.
When you said earlier about, people because you guys were young and you were influencing the minds of children, like I got choked up. People don't understand, many of them do, smart crowd, through these mics anyway, that the government actually thought that you guys made a run at it, in all fairness. We were going to take the government and we were going to change the government and do all these things. Do you think, and I don't know, I have no idea because I'm pretty ignorant to the entire political process, delightfully so. Do you think the government today has that same MO to keep young kids from getting involved? Because it seems like when Obama got elected, it was like so many young people, the turnover, MTV got involved, motor voter registration, let's do it. And then about a year goes by and nobody gives a shit. Do you think the government, Wayne Kramer, still has this, I don't want to say secret because it makes it sound like fucking conspiracy people. Does the government have an item that they visit from time to time about keeping the young people quiet?
No, I mean, what do I know? I mean, this is my...
On this subject, my more
read,
than
this,
most.
This is just my read on it. They are...
He's looking at tea leaves right now.
So consumed with market forces that they're not paying any attention to young people.
So then now, perfect, now is the perfect time for the young people to start some shit.
It's a perfect time
for
young people
store.
to try to steer the nation back, if it ever was, onto, I think it was in the Roosevelt era, and maybe the Kennedy era.
And don't forget my boy Truman now. Come on.
And Truman. Back into a direction that puts people first, that doesn't put profit and big business first.
Isn't that what we thought we were doing when we all got behind Obama? Hope and change. That was this huge rallying cry, and it's been sort of like this dull thud.
Well, yeah, but you know, what he had no choice. He's one third of a government that's sure. three parts.
He's the executive branch,
and the other two branches
just drag him down.
Are just going to stop him at every turn.
Don't you think it's a very fair point? And this is my problem, specifically with Barack Obama, where I go, you know what, this fucking guy is going about. If I was in there, man, I'm that guy drinking a beer on the hood of my Camaro in fucking, Eastern Pennsylvania. Don't you think, you know, like John Boehner walked out of the Oval Office, and this isn't some like fairy tale. We know it. They talked about it very openly. The pundits talked about it when going over the financial cliff, Boehner and Obama just kept having to meet. They don't like one another. And then eventually Boehner was like, I'm fucking out of here. I'm paraphrasing, of course. I don't know what was said, but he walked out of the Oval Office. Now, to me, I imagine that someone walking out of Lyndon Johnson's Oval Office, they're going to get tackled from behind by Lyndon Johnson. Yeah. Or walking out on Reagan, a guy that armed Contras, mm-hmm. or walking on any of these guys, these mm-hmm. old barroom. Eisenhower was a five-star general. Yeah. Nobody told him that the pajamas, it was decorative, and we put the fifth star on because we thought it'd be kind of funny. He just went, no, I'm a fucking five-star general. Yeah. So then we invented the five-star general. The fact that Obama wasn't on TV that night and told me, I think America is dying for, and in this case, literally dying around the edges for someone, a president, to go, you know what just fucking happened to me tonight? Sorry to break up Big Bang Theory, but I just got to let you guys know what's going on. I'm really trying to steer us towards stability.
Yeah.
And this fucking prick bounced on me. So I want you to know I'm trying. And when I make mistakes, I'll tell you the mistakes I made.
I think that's where he's at now. In the middle of his second term,
it happened 3 years ago.
Well, yeah, I think that's a job you got to learn. It's OJT on that job. And, you know, listen, he was a quantum leap ahead. He was of a magnitude ahead of his predecessor and many politicians before him. You know, he brought brought the national discourse into the modern age. All of a sudden, the discussion kind of caught up with reality.
Yeah.
But
I feel like now he just got sucked into the machine.
Of course.
He's not of us. We've lost him.
He was a moderate from the beginning, you know.
Right. Which is fine.
They were very crafty in shaping his campaign He said the things we wanted to hear.
Right.
Many of my friends on the left were furious with him time after time. I personally never expected him to be the, our savior. I thought he was the best bet, and I still think he is the best bet. I think the system itself is so flawed.
It wasn't always
controlled by market forces.
That's the flawed part. The checks and balances in the three branches of government is so pure and simple and streamlined.
It's a brilliant idea.
And beautiful.
Yeah.
You're the president. You're the executive branch. We're going to make the laws. We're going to enforce the laws. And you're going to oversee everything. You're the commander in chief. And we're all going to keep an eye on each other
mm-hmm.
to make sure nobody has too much power, because the guy before us was a fucking lunatic that wouldn't even let us take boats over here and farm.
Right.
But now it's like the other two-thirds of the pie chart at any given time is just like sandbags on a hot air balloon. Like anything, anybody wants to get going. It's just this weight. And I've said this, and I want you to talk more, because I'm kind of geeking out. I've been holding it together the whole time. I'll be honest with you. I was asked once if the legislative branch of the United, and I'll ask my listeners this, and you'll know the answer already, Wayne Kramer, the MC5, of course, the charity we dig, jailguitardoors.org. Go check that out, and just for crying out loud. Just bow down at the altar of the MC5 and realize why every musician in the world wants to jam with these guys. This guy specifically. If the legislative branch of the United States government just didn't show up, didn't tell anybody, but just for a year was just kind of put on freeze, what would change?
Nothing. Good question.
Nothing.
Nothing much. I think things would improve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slowly, community gardens, people helping out, people volunteering, people saying, I got a better idea about how to do this. Let's do it this way. Things would get better.
Guitars to prisoners. You teach them to play. You learn to read music in prison. Weird meeting up with, was it Dizzy Gillespie's band member?
Charlie Parker.
Bird, even better.
Yeah, it was. I was in prison with a man named, they call him Red Rodney. His name was Robert Chudnik. He was a Danish Jew, short, fiery red hair, Jew from Philadelphia.
They do well in prison.
Red had no worries, no problems. Had great respect in prison.
Oh, nice.
And had been back. I think he was on his third trip back when I met him. He said he liked to do business with established institutions.
Was he a drug offense?
He was an archetype jazz musician dope fiend.
Sure.
It was the high point of my time he had replaced the young Miles Davis in the Charlie Parker Quintet.
That's hard.
So Miles wanted to go off and do his own thing, so Charlie Parker had to find another hot trumpet player, and Red Rodney was his man. And when I met him, he was in his early 50s in prison, it was a little distant in the beginning. I don't think he...
Are you guys cellmates?
No, but we lived in the same... he lived in the next block over from me.
And I'm sorry, just to go backwards, Red Rodney and Bird, was Chet Baker on stage with them when he was super young too, out of the Army? Okay, sorry, go ahead.
No. Chet couldn't play well enough to play with Charlie Parker.
But archetypal dope fiend, holy
all dope
smokes.
Fiends, yes, they all could get high together, but Chet didn't have the chops.
No.
Red is a formidable musician.
Yes, sir.
He plays at a level of accomplishment that trumpet players can't play at nowadays. They don't. I mean, even then, in his 50s, in the penitentiary, he would practice an hour a day. I'd hear him do 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 do
do do do do do do do do do do
do do do do doing scales and modes.
But did he have a trumpet? I'm not being a wise ass.
Yes, he had a trumpet.
But I was being completely serious.
No, he had a trumpet.
Know, there's Listen. That scene in Mo Better Blues where Denzel is just practicing with just his mouth and his fingers. So I thought maybe he was doing
that. Red okay. had his
So you guys become buddies, so to speak, friends in jail, and then he taught you to read music. You never knew how to read music before.
Well, no. And he became my mentor.
Okay.
Became, he was kind of a father figure for me. And he was everything that I ever wanted to be. I mean, he was an incredible musician. He was a dope fiend, and he lived that life. And that's what I romanticized dope fiend jazz musicians and alcoholic writers all my life. Bukowski and Hemingway and William Burroughs. We used to call him Uncle Bill. Well, Uncle Bill says.
Yeah.
So
if I could just get out of jail,
here's
I'd be
the
happy.
Thing about what we do is to get a guitar in somebody in prison's hands, we don't give the guitars away as gifts. The guitars represent a challenge. And when I go into the prisons and I talk with guys, I tell them, the people that donated the money to pay for these guitars are sending you a message. And the message is that they believe in you. They believe you want to change for the better. They believe that you want to rejoin your friends and family out in the street. 95% of the people in prison are going to be released one day, and they're going to live next door to you and me. And so the guitars, if you accept these guitars, you accept the challenge to step up and do the hard work of rehabilitation. Figure out how you got in this mess. Figure out what you need to do to make sure you never come back to these penitentiaries again. And then do that work and get ready to come back out and be part of the world with the rest of us.
I read a lot of interviews with the guys that you went to Sing Sing with, and Manitoba, he really had a hard time watching those guys go back into their cells.
And yeah, it was, you know, what was fascinating about that to me, you know, because, you know, I'm a formerly incarcerated person. I go into prison. Sometimes I feel like prisoners are the only people that really understand what I'm talking about. I'm pretty comfortable in there, and I'm pretty comfortable talking to groups of people. And I knew that the musicians, like, you know, Don Was and Gilby and Perry and all those guys, I knew that it would probably be a meaningful experience for them. But I didn't realize how powerful it was really going to hit them, you know, that the guys that they met, because after we played the concert, everything went so well that the prison authorities let us set up some tables so the men could come by and talk with us and we could sign their books and sign their shirts and just, you know, hang out. That it blew their minds that these were just guys. They're just round the way guys, guys you'd see at the supermarket, guys that you play ball with. Yeah, they made some mistakes. Maybe some of them made some really terrible mistakes. But they're just guys. It's not like Lockup and right. All those MSNBC shows. You know, they're not all eyeball tattooed head choppers. Yeah. They're just guys, you know, who made some mistakes and doing, you know, I mean, we had a guy at that gig come up and say, he had been down 10 years and this was the best day he had yet.
I have a question that's been fascinating me and been in my head since I saw the still photos of you guys in Sing Sing prison. How complete, and no jokes, how do you pick a set list for a show like that? I guess it sounds like a joke, but like you got Perry Farrell, you got Gilby, you know, Jerry Cantrell, and of course, you know, Wayne Kramer of the MC5, Tom Morello. Yeah, like do you go, all right, let's open with a little Rage. Fuck you. You can't tell, you know, you know what? The guards probably won't pass that one.
Hey, we did Jailbreak.
Really?
We did Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here.
That's pretty funny.
It was deep. Yeah.
Sure.
But the best was.
And you know what? In that moment, that's beautiful. In that moment, every prisoner hearing it could mean it. For the first time in their lives, they thought of people they loved and they were watching you guys and they thought, how I wish you were here.
I'll tell you, Billy Bragg came with us.
Yeah, we didn't fucking get to Billy Bragg. We've been watching. All right, sorry.
So Billy's got Jail Guitar Doors written on his guitar. Well, when I got locked up, this new music form emerged. It was called punk rock. And there was a band in England, a very conscious band called The Clash, very plugged in band. And they wrote a song about me going to prison. Me and a couple of their friends that had trouble with the authorities.
Which song?
It's called Jail Guitar Doors. It was on one. It was a B-side. And, you know, when it happened.
I'm embarrassed. I don't even know it. I'm a Clash nut.
Well, I'm here to fill you in.
Thank you, brother.
They wrote the song.
Brothers now.
Yeah, we are brothers. And I thought it was a great show of solidarity. You know, I didn't know these guys. It was musician to musician, across the sea, you know. And then after I got out, they came to Detroit. I went down to see them. I met Joe and Mick and all the cats, and we became friends for the rest of Joe's life. And I'm still good friends with Mick. And I didn't think any more of it. I just thought, well, that's terrific. So here we are in Sing Sing 30 years later, and Billy has Jail Guitar Doors written on his guitar. And I said, damn, Bill, what's up with that? He said, oh, it's old Clash B-side. Have you ever heard it? And I said, Bill, the song is about me. He said, what do you mean? I said, what are the lyrics? Well, let me tell you about Wayne and his deals of cocaine. Oh, fucking bloody fucking hell.
And you talk about a guy that goes over lyrics before he puts them down and sings them with a fine-tooth comb.
Oh, he's the Billy best. Bragg's. I adore this guy. And
my wife loves him, and I've always been on the fence about him. And there's a documentary about him and his, you know, being very political on stage. And they do show fans booing him and saying, fucking shut up and play. And he goes, no, that's not, and then the fans start to boo the guy heckling. And then he admonishes the people booing, go, no, we all bought a ticket. Yeah. He can talk as long as he wants.
That's right.
And I've always loved this song. He's brilliant. I love the moxie of a guy with a guitar and just a curtain behind him.
He's brilliant. And so he explained to me that a guy wrote him who worked in a prison in England, who was trying to use music as a tool for rehabilitation with some prisoners, but didn't have any guitars. He had one guitar. Billy, could you help us find some other guitars? And Billy thought this was a good thing to do. And he wanted to do something to commemorate the life's work of Joe Strummer, because Joe and the Clash were the reason Billy picked up the guitar. He found because of the Clash, he saw he could combine his activism and his love of music in one thing. And so he wanted to honor Joe. So he said, I'm going to start this independent initiative and I'll call it that Clash song, Jail Guitar Doors. And then he went around and strong-armed his musician friends to donate some money to buy guitars for prisoners.
So who got the URL for Jail Guitar Doors? Is that you or is that Billy?
We both have it.
Oh, okay.
So we did our show at Sing Sing, and on the bus ride home, we just kept talking about how playing the guitar allows one to process complex thoughts. Mm. You know, art... Music is anger management, you know, and if we can get a guitar in a guy's hands or a woman's hands, and she can, I task them to write a song to your mom about how you got here, write a song to your wife, write a song to your son, write a song to yourself about how you got here. Because when they do that, it's transformative. They start to see themselves in a different way. They find they can express themselves non-confrontationally.
And they're accomplishing something.
They're building something where there was nothing. And that's a great argument to what prison tells you, which is you're nothing. That you're all you are is a bed. You're a number. You're a pain in the ass. You're
and
a
you
loser.
Know this, and you know this firsthand.
So the more we talked about it, I said, you know, this is good that you do this in Britain in Her Majesty's prisons. But, you know, I'm a ex-convict. I'm a musician. And I need to be of service to my fellows. And these are my fellows. And I'm uniquely positioned to make something that's not a cool conversation, a cool conversation. So I said, I want to take this on for America. I want to found Jail Guitar Doors USA. Billy Bragg, my wife, Margaret Kramer, and I founded Jail Guitar Doors USA. That was almost 5 years ago now. Today, we're in over 35 prisons in America.
How often do you go?
Probably every few months. It's very slow going getting into prison.
Oh, I can't even imagine. It's amazing how quickly you can get in. But when you want to get in.
But I want to go home afterwards.
Yeah. It's astounding. And those rides home on the bus, we're rounding third here, so I'll keep this brief. The ride home on the bus with these musicians, is it exhilarating because you just came off stage, or is it a fucking bummer?
No, it's people are knocked out. They're not. The men are knocked out that we played
out.
In a good way.
Okay,
they're thrilled that we're there. They enjoy the music. They're so. We get mail all the time when we ship guitars out to prisons from guys that just say, you know, you've made life worthwhile with this guitar. And you know, yeah, I'm going to do this the next 6 years. I mean, I know a guy in the California system. He's a great guitar player. And he said, you know, we became friends. I've been up there a few times to see him. And he says, yeah, you know, I got 20 years. I've only got 8 more to go. And he's happy about it. I think, damn, the human spirit is, I mean, how incredible that this guy's enthusiastic. He only has 8 more years to go.
It's salvageable, the human spirit.
Oh, man, it's incredible.
Always able to accept light and give it back out.
So let me, if we're rounding third, let me move forward to September 6th at the Ford Amphitheater. We're having our first annual Jail Guitar Doors Rock Out concert featuring Billy Bragg, a superstar who must remain unnamed.
Pitbull, whatevs.
Dave Alvin and his brother Phil. First time singing together. I'll play a few tunes. The wonderful Jill Sobule will play and sing.
Yeah.
Jason Heath and the Greedy Souls, great Americana band. And one of our Jail Guitar Doors graduates, man that came up in the California prison system and found music as a way to turn his life around, who actually runs a music program for the homeless in downtown L.A., Frank Foster and his Melting Pot. Frank's terrific. So he's going to perform. And it's, you know, and you know the venue?
Yeah, I think it's the Black Crows there. It's got that little balcony and then in the balcony.
It's open air. It's across the freeway from the bowl.
Oh, it's right on the Cahuenga Pass.
Yes.
Yes.
Right across from the bowl.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
It's the most beautiful venue.
Forget what I said about the Black Crows. I don't know what that was called. So I know exactly where it is. It's right at Cahuenga Pass. As you come up, you're on the right side of the 101.
Right across from the bowl. Straight across from the bowl.
That's great.
It's a beautiful venue. Great great sight lines, great sound.
I used to pass it every day. I've never been in there.
And we'll come. We'll see you September 6th.
Yeah, dude.
September 6th. It's really going to be cool. The venue is incredible. We're going to have food, drinks. We got other entertainment.
I know who the superstar is, Tom Arnold.
Damn.
Go out and do
something. You're good, but you're wrong.
Tom's a good guy. September 6th. And where do people go for tickets for this, Wayne Kramer? The MC5? Jail
Ford
Guitar
Theater.
Doors.
.com? Ford Theater.
Not when you're from Michigan.
I'm from Detroit.
Love.
Yeah, right.
How about this? Well, Matty Boy can put a link to tickets. We'll figure out a way to get it up on jmoore.com.
Sure.
Yeah. And you down? You in?
Absolutely.
And you've made my night. I was geeked up to meet you. And anybody that's happily married, I'm so into it. I dig it. So to see two people come in here.
I'm all the way married.
Yeah.
She's got
too.
Papers on me.
As she should.
Yeah.
Because she, out of all the producers you've ever worked with, she's the best one.
Oh, are you?
She produced you here tonight,
yes,
to get you here.
She did.
And I want to say, I don't know if there's ever a seat going to these prisons. I can't play an instrument, but just I'd be real quiet and I wouldn't make any jokes just to watch it and be overwhelmed.
Let's leave the channel open.
Okay.
You know, it's possible.
All right. I know how hard it is and it's your gig. I don't want to be that guy.
You know, it's possible.
You got a +1 on that jail, dude. Kern County, bro. +1. Come on, man. What the fuck? I'm trying to help you out, Wayne. Guys, somebody goes, oh, lightens the mood. Don't you get to sell merch? I'll sell merch, bro. There's a merch there. They got canteen money. They don't, you know. You've really said, I had a shitty week and it was all bullshit and personal things and family members and people ill and not. And, you know, Ken Hartman, just one name.
One man.
I picture, who's doing okay because of guys like you. And,
he's doing okay because of guys like Ken Hartman. I mean,
with the help of.
Well, we're both working together. He's working on that side of the fence, and I'm working on this side of the fence.
Wayne Kramer, what I take from this conversation, I'm embarrassed that it ever left my mind. I'm a proud Catholic around the corner, and the sign above the door says all are welcome, a very progressive church, St. Monica's, and think globally and act locally, and we beat around it, and we got through it, we went under it and over it. And that is the human spirit and the human being. Redemption is never something that should ever be stripped. And
yeah, there's always a chance, you know. I mean, you just can't say of the 8,000 LWAP prisoners in California that none of them are worth saving, that none of them are worth redemption. Some of them are certainly so damaged that they need to be confined.
Specifically, the substance abuse guys. You know, in the preamble of the big book, it says there are those unfortunate few that can't be saved, and saved from themselves for mm-hmm. a while. But when you're incarcerated, you get time to sit and think.
They do give you time to think.
If you're lucky enough, you get a guitar and you get to get some chops and you get to think. And I just think what you're doing is great. And somehow, in the course of an hour and 10 minutes, the MC5 seems very long ago, and I didn't think it was possible. It took a backseat to the highly relevant nature of what we were talking about, and it's because we're talking about human beings.
Yeah,
Wayne Kramer, you're changing the world. Hold on. All that fighting and all that hooting and the hollering and the White Panther and the file on you from the government and going to jail and raising hell, you're doing it, brother.
Well, I'm
going to make you accept this. You're doing it. And so few people in life, that much time goes by where what I was trying to do as a knuckleheaded teenager to now at my age that is undisclosed, you're changing the world. And just good on you, brother. Cheers, mate.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure being with you. I really enjoyed tonight, and I enjoy the opportunity to chat with our mainline mellows out there, and hopefully I'll see you all down the line.
Yeah,
come and see us at the Ford Amphitheater.
We're going to go. Me and Matty Boy will go there. And
it's gonna be a great hard rocking night.
We're tied at the hip. Me and my boyfriend Matty over here. jailguitardoors.org. And you guys out there and you gals, you know who you are. A quarter of a million strong every Monday, every Friday. Hit Wayne Kramer up on Twitter at Wayne Kramer. Let him know you dig what he's doing, because you know what? Sometimes you run into bureaucracy and it sucks and you go, why am I even doing this? And then one day you check your Twitter timeline. You go, oh, these people think it's really cool. I'm going to keep going. Just absolutely great, brother. Thank you. And just you're doing it. Very few people in this world are doers. Wayne Kramer's a doer. And put your name on that, brother.